We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're back, we're dads on the air.
And welcome to Dads on the Air for another week. It's the 6th of April, 2010, and in the studio with me I have Ian Purdy from ianpurdy.com.
Good morning, Phil, and good morning, listeners.
And, of course, myself, Phil York, Dads in Distress. We have an interesting show on today. Later on, we will be talking with Sue Price from the Men's Rights Agency in regards to some toughening of the legislation around the child support system and how they monitor parents, I guess, and I think they're talking jail time. So we'll talk more with Sue in regards to that.
Yeah, they're going to be bringing in more draconian laws and punishing more of the punished for their degraded state.
Okay, we'll start off with the news. I'll start off. We've got a couple of news items around suicide rates. We've been waiting on this report in regards to the suicide rates, and here they are. Reported in the Brisbane Times by Julie Robertson, a clear increase in the number of seven figures were first compiled, but 21% of cases referred to the coroner in 2007 are still open, meaning that the suicide rate could rise even further. For 2008, 37% of coroner's cases had not been concluded. Ian Hickey, the executive director of the Brain and Mind Research Institute at the University of Sydney, said the number can only go up, even though the proportion of suicides in that final 20% of unresolved 2007 deaths may not be as high. So that's interesting stuff. It goes on to say that the 2008 figures are now much higher based on a lower proportion of coronial cases, and the final 2008 figure could be as high as 2,500 suicides. We now may be facing a real rise in suicide, in which case, what is the Rudd government's response to enhancing suicide prevention, Professor Hickey asked.
I mean, you really got to say that suicide is a symptom of the ultimate breakdown in society, where people simply cannot imagine a better option than just to stop. You've really got to say, I mean, there must be a lot of people out there, as we know, doing it very, very tough to get to the point in the numbers that they are, where they can't see a better option than simply killing themselves. I mean, it's horrifyingly tragic. And then you think about, okay, that's the number of people who are actually going ahead and doing it. But then how many people out there who, for whatever reason, they're just not brave enough to take their own life? They don't want to bring the stigma on their children or whatever. They're walking around in this state where they really don't want to be here. They don't feel like they're part of society. They don't feel like there's any point to them being alive anymore, but they're hanging in because they can't bring themselves to take the plunge. I mean, you've just got to say that this is a shocking reflection on a society that really is going bad. I mean, when people are taking their own lives, they can't see a better option than just necking themselves. Whoa, things are bad.
And for every successful suicide, or not successful, but, you know, one that goes through,
results in a dead body.
Yeah, results.
That's successful, yeah.
There is, on average, another seven attempts from other people which have failed. And, you know, that, of course, puts pressure on the hospitals, on the mental health system, and, you know, all over the shop.
So families and everything, and, you know, employers, everything, you know. It's just a horrible statistic, that one. You really, I mean, for somebody who, I mean, I think most people go through life without ever considering suicide. I don't think it's a normal, you know, kind of impulse to think, oh, shall I kill myself today? No, I might hang around there, yeah, some good footy on the weekend. No, I might, so I'll put it off till next week or something. I mean, I don't know. I mean, to get to the point where you can't see a better option than to kill yourself, just that I just find that quite mind-boggling, how things could get so bad that you would prefer, you know, whether you believe in heaven and hell and, you know, all the religious aspect on what happens after you die, or whether you just believe that you can just kill yourself and stop dead. Well, I mean, you know, there's no guarantee that killing yourself is going to end your problems. You know, it's certainly going to change things a lot. You're just not going to be here anymore, but or you're not going to be consequent. I mean, I don't know if people believe in ghosts or whatever. I do. I believe in ghosts. I've seen several of them. I've cohabited lots of buildings with ghosts in them, and I believe in them, and they are real. But yeah, this whole idea of suicide is horrifying. It really is a symptom of a serious breakdown in society when people just can't think of a better way, you know, through tomorrow, you know, till the next day. Surely people should have faith that things are going to get better.
Yep. And another article here, this one from the USA, again on suicide rates, written by Katie Drummond. Suicide rate greater amongst divorced men, research finds. American men are four times more likely than women to take their own lives.
An improvement.
It is.
You know, they don't have to iron his shirts anymore, don't have to cook his dinner, and they get all the advantages, you know.
Yeah.
Don't have to put up with him snoring all night, you know, and they can go down and go and find themselves a new model, you know, anytime they want.
Yeah, they've got the support structures left, right and centre. They don't have to look too far to find a welfare group that's willing to give them, you know, financial help, give them help around their housing, give them help emotionally. For us as men, we go out looking for those sorts of things, and all we get is a lot of closed doors and a lot of disappointment, and often, you know, places like Dad's in Distress, is one of the only places around where, guys can come.
Yeah, turn to an ear, basically somebody who'll listen to them.
Yeah, so this article goes on to say the impact of divorce, on suicide is so strong, it can even be gleaned from international comparisons. Amongst industrialized nations, those with the highest divorce rates also have the highest suicide rates. For example, a 2008 study out of the UK concluded that suicide and divorce rates saw parallel increases and a simultaneously peak in the late 1990s. Suicide then dropped while divorce rates did not, likely because of more intervention among teenage boys, the researchers speculated. But divorce also tends to crop up more in regions that are susceptible to alcoholism, drug abuse and widespread migratory tendencies, oil and gas boom towns, for example. So suicide rates may be less about divorce, but more about a confluence of precipitating factors that are clearly taking a greater toll on men, who account for 79% of the 32,000 suicides in 2005.
Wow, that's nearly 8 out of 10 suicides are men.
Yeah, 32,000.
Mm, no, that's a shocking statistic, really. That is shocking.
It is. Okay,
like 65% to almost 6,000, and those with a mental illness by 75% to 7,082 in the 6 years to 2009. New data shows the avalanche of children with special needs is being felt most acutely in regular classes, where thousands are now accommodated with too little funding to provide individual support. Teachers and principals have said they are finding it increasingly difficult to cater for all students. This is a horror show. I mean, autism has got to be one of the most debilitating diseases that a child can have, and we don't know the causes. It's, they say we've got an epidemic going on here, but it's not hereditary. It's not contagious. You don't get it from somebody who's got it coughing on you or something. We don't know where it comes from. There has been speculation as to the causes. Some people have said that it's got something to do with vaccination, and some of the vaccines have been linked with increases in rates of autism. But there's also a lot of the chemicals that we now live with, you know, a lot of the carpets that we use, of the wall drapes. I mean, basically all the stuff we put in our homes these days is toxic. VOCs, what is it called? Volatile organic compounds leap out of just about everything. And all the plastics are toxic. All of your synthetic carpets are toxic. All your paints are toxic. You know, pretty much everything in your house is toxic unless we start reclaiming our environments back. And one of the easiest ways to do this is to put in a lot of pot plants. Apparently the potting mix stops VOCs acting. But this epidemic of autism is something that we really, really must look at, because, I mean, I've got friends with autistic children, and I've got to say it's got to be one of the most debilitating And the saddest thing, when you're the friend of a parent whose child gets a diagnosis of autism, I mean, you just feel for those people. You know that they are, in severe cases, that they are basically going to be bonded to this child. They're basically going to be its carers, its support for the rest of its life. They're going to be wiping its bottom and feeding it its meals. And the kid's never going to mature. It's probably not going to marry, have rewarding relationships, have a career. I mean, autism is a shocking, shocking thing for parents, and in the children themselves. I mean, it just seems to take their life away from them before it even begins. You know, it's a shocking condition.
They're in Melbourne, but it's also happening everywhere in New South Wales and Queensland. Parents in some rural areas have to travel long distances to see their children under supervision because there is no contact centre nearby. In Sydney Basin, we have three contact centres. Three. A family law court will order supervised access in cases where children are considered to be at risk, or if they see their mother or father alone. This can include cases where there is concern about family violence, serious mental illness, or drug and alcohol abuse. In these cases, a court can order that a parent see the child, usually once a fortnight for about 2 hours, supervised by workers. More than 23,000 parents and children attended centres in 2008-2009 financial year, which included supervised access to the handover of children between parents. Access usually takes place in contact centres designed so that separated parents with a history of conflict do not see each other, and that's the main reason why I've seen dads go into contact centres, was for that reason. You know, there is, she goes on to say, unless there has been an incredibly destructive relationship between the parent and the child, it's usually important for them to have some contact. There goes on to say that parents are waiting sometimes up to 6 or 8 months to actually get onto these lists so they can see their children for these precious 2 hours every fortnight. The government has funded $15 million a year into funding the 65 centres around Australia, and was working with the sector to try and reduce waiting times. Really, it's not good enough. There's nothing happening. This has been like this for the last 12 to 18 months that I've been aware of. And in that time, the waiting lists and the waiting times are just getting larger and larger and longer and longer. And the government really needs to address this because there's lots of children out there now that are on these waiting lists to see their non-custodial parent.
Yeah, no, it's just a tragedy. And, you know, and not being able to see your parents, I mean, anyone, put yourself in that position. If suddenly you couldn't see your father or your mother, I mean, it's a terrible thing to happen to a child, you know, especially over a divorce or something which they've had no say over. They've had no control in the situation. They're basically just being swept along in this tide of horror that they've got no control over, and it's being driven by the two people who they love and care about and need the most in the world. It's a shocker.
It is. Just one other thing while we're on the news, we do, Dads in Distress has our Dads in Distress Walkathon on this Sunday at Centennial Park in Sydney. Starting times are 8 a.m. and 10 p.m. This is a walkathon directly to help fund our 1300 number. We operate a 1300 number, cost of a local call for the callers to call in, and you know, the average call that we take lasts about 40 minutes. So it's not just a call about, you know, where are your meetings or anything. It's about their situation, where they're at, and we're just trying to raise funds, as I said, to fund that line. So if you can come along, there's quite a few of us walking. So far, we have raised 2,000.
You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air. Interesting article in the Telegraph about a week ago by Cassandra Jardine, and she's talking about a BBC series which is going to be released in Inside Women Were Selfishly Trying to Thwart Them. Not only had these did these women want total control of the children, believing their love was enough, they also expected their exes to keep them in the style to which they had become accustomed, while the men lived in cramped bedsits. When one man finally manages to remortgage his own home to keep a working mother in hers, her response is, "Okay, so I can book a holiday." The programs not only seek to explain why 40% of fathers lose touch with their children within 2 years of divorce, the figure is likely to be even higher when unmarried parents separated, but also why this matters, looking at the confused faces of children being fought over by parents like favourite toys. It is not difficult to imagine what might happen when they grow into teenagers, unsure about their loyalties and identities. Indeed, the third program, we see fatherless teenagers behaving appallingly. The prospectus for children who don't see their fathers are bleak, according to a UNICEF report into sadness for the children involved. Children who yearn, however unrealistically, for mummy and daddy to live together happily ever after, but those parting can be handled more or less well, the emotionally healthy 18-year-olds say Judge Nichols Crichton, who works in the family courts. Are those who can say, whatever happened between my parents, I knew I was loved and I was free to love both parents without feeling guilty. So that sounds like a very interesting documentary.
Well, it sounds like what we basically deal with here on Dads on the Air every week. I mean, this is what's happening. We've been documenting this abuse of fathers and men that's been taking place over the last 30 years, and it now it seems to be going mainstream, and it's basically just showing those who are lucky enough to be in comfortable, happy marriages, that for those of us who missed that particular option for whatever reason, that we, our lives are anything but happy and content, and that our children are suffering. That's the worst thing, that they're more likely to end up in jail and on drugs, like you say, and that they're going to have problems in later life forming proper relationships as well, which means that you're probably not going to get to see your grandkids either. So
yeah, it makes you wonder, what that next generation of relationships is going to be like, because with all these children not being able to form relationships with their own parents, then they go out and try to form relationships themselves, and they have nothing to glean on from the past other than not knowing and being kept from one parent. So it's really, really tough. And this BBC documentary, Who Needs Fathers, I'm sure would be a great watch. And it's not only shows what's happening in England, but it is also reflected in what's happening all over the world, Australia, the US, Europe, so on and so forth. And for every story, there's at least one child in the middle of all this, often there's more than one child, but you can guarantee that there's one child at least in all this, and that child's hurting, and that child needs access to both its parents. Simple as that.
It is simple, isn't it? That's the way nature devised it, and for some reason it just seems to work a whole lot better that way. All of these modern attempts at social engineering have pretty much failed, you've got to say.
Yep, absolutely. All right, let's go to the phone. We've got Greg Andreessen with us, I believe. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Dad.
Good morning. How's it going?
Not too bad, mate. How are you?
Good, good.
That's good.
Yeah, Greg, well, look, thanks for coming on this morning at such short notice. We're basically just trawling through media here at the moment. There's been a couple of shocking articles that we've been able to discuss, and then, of course, Phil was just talking then about a new television series that they're making in the UK that is basically going to be dealing with issues of fatherlessness and what men have to go through after divorce, and also highlighting the shocking impact on their children.
Absolutely. Compassionate and really revealing look at what, you know, as separated fathers, every dad who's been through the system knows what it's like, but in terms of reaching a broader audience of all those people who haven't been in touch with that system to really expose what goes on, I think it's really exciting and groundbreaking.
Yeah, I think it's really important because you do notice that when you go through divorce and you're sitting at the pub with your friends who are still happily in their families and you try to explain to them what's going on and they just simply don't get it. They just think that, you know, that you're jumping up and down and parroting about injustice. I mean, you should just sit down and shut up and finish your beer and this is just what happened to you and there's no trend here and get over it.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of threads in that attitude. One is that I think most Australians still have this idea that the legal system is about justice, when it's actually nothing could be further from the truth. It's about usually about making money for very rich lawyers.
Well, it's about protecting property and privilege. That's what the legal system's all about.
That's it. And if you look at the even the way the laws are written, like the New South Wales domestic violence law, at very start of the law says, you know, domestic violence is something that men do to women. You know, this is written into the law. And how on earth can that, if you're a male victim of domestic violence, and we all know that that one in three victims are male, how on earth can you expect to receive any sort of justice when bias is actually written into the laws of the land?
Well, when what's happened to you is not even included in the definition of what the problem is.
That's it. Know? So, yeah. I mean, it couldn't be any clearer than that. The other thing, Fred, that comes through in that approach, you know, the guy at the pub who doesn't really appreciate, there's often this idea, well, you must have done something wrong yourself to deserve it. You know, well, the system's okay, but you must have, you know, you must have been a bastard.
Yeah, you must have hit her wrong. You must have done something.
Right, or maybe you're just an idiot, or you're incompetent, or you had a bad lawyer, or, you know, there's all
small
of these
penis
excuses made.
Bad in bed, whatever.
Right. So, look, I'm hoping we can get a hands on a copy of this UK documentary and even play some excerpts on air.
Yeah, that would be
worth
a good
chasing
idea.
Up for the program, because it really, I think, will be a really good series.
Yeah, no, I think so. It sounds like it should be quite valuable and open a lot of people's eyes to the injustices that are taking place in our society under our noses pretty well, daily.
That's it. We're very much in danger of going back to the Dark Ages, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, that is a big worry.
It's scary.
Because when you consider how hard fought were the small gains that we did actually get through the Howard government, how you know, all of the fathers' groups lobbied and you know, the great effort that went in to trying to represent our point of view, most of which was ignored, but we did get a little bit of an ear from them, and things have improved slightly. But this idea that they need to roll them all back because women feel intimidated or something is just patently absurd. But
absolutely,
this is what we're up against.
That's it. So you know, we'll have another long battle ahead, I think, to try and stop this rollback. And I think we just...
You just basically give everything to the mother and the father's just kicked out in the cold and the children can all be, you know, brought up in welfare and end up in jail and take drugs and nobody cares.
Mm. Look, I had an enlightening letter the other day. I wrote to the chair of the National Council to Prevent Violence Against Women and Their Children, which is one of the organisations set up by the federal government, and they've been one of the driving forces behind this family law rollback idea. And, you know, their whole approach is that, you know, violence is something that men do to women and children, and that, you know, we need to change the family law because we've got all these dangerous, violent fathers out there.
Men are in the family. Yeah, there's men in those families. They're not safe.
And it was enlightening because I pointed out to her that all of this data around, well, you know, look at the child homicide figures. Twice as many mothers killed their kids as fathers. And let's look at the child abuse statistics that have come out in Western Australia. There were freedom of information requests put into every state and territory in the country, and they all got blocked. And only one state agreed to release their child abuse figures.
Yep.
And this showed that, you know, something like 75% of all child abuse is done by mothers.
And so all their white ribbon campaign and all the statistics that they made up and they spewed forth about that all turned out to be just a load of garbage.
Well, every year there's another load of factoids being put out that we then have to challenge. It's sort of, we have a regular thing every November with putting out press releases basically saying, you know, challenging these massive errors in what the White Ribbon Day puts out. I mean, you know, the concept of, you know, stopping violence against women, you know, that's a great concept.
Yep.
Let's get your facts right, and let's not target all men as violent and abusive in the process. You know, that's basically what the White Ribbon Day campaign does, and I suspect that some of the people in the campaign, that is actually their agenda. I actually believe
it would have to be the post-technological society, that basically all of the things that make a man are no longer required. And
what role is there for men now? I mean, they're not needed as breadwinners. That was their number one role, because the government steps in being a father. And the evidence shows categorically that all the children do fundamentally better across every single social indicator when they have the father in their lives. And so fathers are absolutely necessary for children and for the good of a socially functioning society. And yet we have these crazies out there basically pretending that fathers are dangerous to their children. You know, it's like, how absolutely nonsensical, because it couldn't get any more crazy.
Traumatized hysteria, really. The people who obviously have had some bad experiences themselves, haven't been able to deal with them, and have jumped to a huge generalization that has included the whole male sex, which is really just quite stupid, really.
It's stupid. Yeah, it is stupid. And, you know, I mean, I've had bad experiences with individual women, but I don't go around pretending that, you know, I hate all women, or all women are dumb, or, you know, bad or anything, you know.
Well, exactly.
It's you can understand someone might want to do that, but it's not an intelligent perspective.
No.
And it's certainly not a perspective that should be informing the agendas of government in this country.
Absolutely. No, I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head there, Greg. I think that pretty much summed the situation up. Mate, have you got anything else going on in Greg world that you'd like to tell us about while we've got you on air?
Well, there is an exciting study. I can't give you any details because the report is at the draft stage at the moment. But the most recent, and actually one of the only studies ever of male victims of intimate partner abuse, so all the things that female victims experience, men experience too, but men experience one thing that women victims don't experience, which is this administrative and legal abuse, which is when the woman will actually use the powers of the law with false allegations, etc., to stop the father from seeing his children, and that is a form of domestic violence. And these men really suffer when some nasty women abuse legal procedures in this way. And so that's going to be a very groundbreaking study and should get a lot of media attention. So I'd be happy to come back on and talk about that in about a bit.
I can eat steak or any other type of food. No! least I don't have to go buy her flowers. Don't have to be early, I don't have to be late. I'm Daddy Immaculate. I'm Daddy Immaculate. Come to her neighbor. I'm Daddy Immaculate. I'm coming to a bonnet you. Cause I just said her bum looks big in this. Nobody to love, nobody to care, nobody to try and tell me to cut my hair. Nobody to play with, nobody to fight. Her bum looks big in
so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child. Dad's in Distress, 1-300-853-437.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
And now on the line we have Sue Price. Good morning, Sue.
Good morning, Ian. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Oh, great. Great after Easter and a few days relaxing a little bit, so it's very pleasant.
I'm looking forward to my few days relaxing. I'm hoping they're about to come up. It all just seems to be getting more and more hectic in my little universe, but that's life.
Of course, that's the way it goes.
Yeah. So what are you going to talk to us about this morning, Sue?
Well, I was pretty horrified when I picked up the emails yesterday and saw that on Easter Monday, the Minister for Human Services, Chris Bowen, announced a crackdown on welfare fraud with optical surveillance, which we know they've been doing as far as child support goes.
Yep.
But there, this is about child support executions or relevant state police service for prosecution action in some cases. Now that's a bit mind-boggling.
Well, it is really. I mean, how's that going to help them come up with the money to support their children? Really,
well,
I mean,
doesn't. Look, we had this argument with the previous federal government, and they backed off changing the law to. They were looking at bringing in a jailing provision for people who have large debts on child support.
Yep.
But they acknowledged that it was counterproductive to do that.
Yeah.
How can you extract money out of someone if they can't go and get some satisfaction out of it?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. It definitely is punitive. It seems that way. They just basically want to punish you for having failed to hold your family together.
Well, yeah, it's also one of the greatest problems we find with child support. It's in the Family Law Act, of course, that the children should be maintained virtually in the circumstances which they became accustomed when the family was intact. But, of course, now, when your family breaks up, when it separates, and your circumstances decrease, you know, you don't have as much money, etc., they don't take that into account.
Yep.
And look, even if you are still in an intact family, common sense says that if you sort of lose your job or you don't earn as much, you have to cut back. Well, you can do that in an intact family, but apparently if you're separated, you're not allowed to do that at all. The family, the children and whoever's caring for the children, usually the mum, has to be maintained at their usual standard of living.
Which is usually at the direct expense of the father.
Well, it means he can't live. That's why we have such high suicide rates among separated men. And it takes them in about 2 years until they get to this stage. That's when the credit cards are maxed out. That's when the borrowing capacities from family and friends have reached the limit, and they just have nowhere else to turn to.
Wow, and record numbers of them are killing themselves, which is
child
tragedy.
Support, it's noted that about their rate of suicide, or rate of early death, I should say, because they won't give us the suicide figures, is about 2.5 times that in the general population.
Yes, so
that's pretty substantial.
That is. That's an indicator of the pressures that they're bringing to bear on people who are in an unfortunate situation, in a mess, basically.
That's right. It's quite appalling in my mind. And then they put themselves up for award ceremonies for suicide prevention. And, of course, they are directly causing suicides in quite a number of cases.
Yeah, no, well, they are. Well, look, let's face it, if arseholes could fly, the Child Support Agency would be an airport.
That would probably be right, I'd say. Yeah. Look, it's not good, and I think people really do need to take this seriously, because Chris Bowen is obviously on his white charger, you know, riding to the defence of people and making punitive decisions against other men that he sees as doing the wrong thing, you know, maybe for their misfortune, their circumstances. But, you know, we need to stop this sort of thinking.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's not constructive.
That's right. You know, he's saying in July 2008, the CSA established a 12-month trial to use covert optical surveillance to support investigations into a number of limited serious cases. Following an evaluation of this trial in June 2009, the government decided that covert optical surveillance would permanently form part of the CSA's toolkit for investigating serious cases of child support non-compliance and fraud.
When they were in there?
Well, they impose a debt on them. You know, the government creates a debt, and they impose it, and they then collect it, which to me sounds very questionable on a judicial basis or a constitutional basis. But, of course, a lot of people have tried to prove that.
Yep.
But the courts have never sort of accepted that position.
Suffering from the same malaise. There's some great policy machine, you know, in The Hague or somewhere hidden away, maybe in a bunker in Washington or somewhere, where they churn out all these ridiculous policies which all just seem to come into force in all of the democracies in the world.
Well, I think, you know, this is part of the UN agenda with the CEDAW, the Convention for Women. There are a lot of powerful people in those organisations, classified as non-government organisations, but of course they're pushing for consideration for women, and I don't mind that, women and children, yes, but why not men as well?
Absolutely.
You know, we shouldn't be discriminating against one gender, which is what's happening now.
Yep, that's ridiculous. So, all right, well, anything else to add to that, Sue? What are we going to do about all this?
Well, I just want people to complain. I just want to get them onto their phone to their federal members of parliament and complain about it. It is just illogical.
Yep.
It is a really stupid decision if that's the way they're going to go. And we will be tackling it for sure.
Yeah.
I've had so many cases recently that have been absolutely appalling in the way that child support has treated third parties. The intrusion into their privacy has been immense. We're not making headway, unfortunately, in complaints about it, but we're trying. But, you know, they're accessing second partners' bank accounts to find their details, and the banks are giving them over.
Which is ridiculous.
What is quite appalling, because it's not a summons. It is what you might call an administrative lookalike summons. When child support sends off the paperwork to a bank, we want you to provide us with information about this person's account. It is not an actual summons, and the bank should not in relationship. A lot of women must be, second wives must be getting extremely worried and extremely concerned by the interference shown by child support into their own personal affairs. It seems to be on the basis that, if your wife's working, she can afford to look after you, so all your money can go to support the child.
Yeah, or support the ex-wife.
Yeah, we've even had cases in where a husband and wife are in partnership together and they both contribute equally to the business. They've divided income from the business between the two of them. Child support have come along and said, no, she doesn't deserve to earn that much. We're going to reduce her amount by 20,000-30,000 and we'll add it back onto the husband's income.
And then take it and give it
and
to the...
And then use it for child support calculation. Yep. Now, how can you do that? That is discriminatory in the extreme against the woman, the females who are being treated this way, whose income is being treated this way, as if they're a completely second-class citizen to their husband.
Sure.
And they have every right and every capability and ability to earn a good income in their own right.
Well, so much for the glass ceiling. Here they are saying, well, no, you can't earn this money.
Well, that's right.
You know, it's ridiculous.
That's right. It's absolutely it's a crazy system, and it's of course the trouble is I think child support are you can't virtually sue them under the Discrimination Act. I think they're sort of protected from
to lock people up, you know, especially fathers whose only crime is that they
marrying the wrong person.
They married the wrong person. Exactly.
They both fell out of love with each other, which people accept can happen.
Which happens,
but there's no need for this sort of punitive action. But what really worries me also, and I have mentioned this before on the program, we have raised it with the minister. Child support was brought in to recoup some of the money that the government was paying out for the children of separated parents, and on that basis they collect back, they garnish you money and they do all sorts of nasty things like that without court orders to
anyway that it's
you know, life has changed since that act was written.
Sure.
And we've moved on. Mums and dads both work to support their families. We need to have a family law act that recognises that situation and recognises the care that both parents provide for their children. Our current act doesn't do that properly.
Yep.
It's sort of been band-aided all the way through, and they've changed a little bit here and a little bit there, but nothing in essence has changed from the original agenda.
Right. Brought in by Gough Whitlam back in 1975 or something.
75, yeah. And Lionel Murphy, who between them managed to bring in a huge amount of legislation in a very, very short period of time.
Yep. And then turned the whole parliamentary system on its head.
That's right.
When the Governor-General sacked the Prime Minister. Yeah, ridiculous.
Well, we might be looking at that again, mightn't we?
So. Oh, you never can tell.
But who knows what's going to happen. But look, people have got to become politically active. People have got to start complaining to their politicians again. That was the only way... It was the only way child support was changed, the only way the 1995 changes to the Family Law Act were brought in, because of the incredible response that there was to some inquiries that were held in 1992. Something like 6,000 responses were put in by people who'd been affected by family law and child support, and that produced some changes. But again, the changes were corrupted by the bureaucracy when they're writing the legislation. And unfortunately, our politicians don't really understand what they're signing off on.
Yeah, they just rubber stamp it.
Well, that's right, particularly with child support. They just don't understand what they're doing, and that, I think, is really a really difficult situation.
Yeah, they're just putting Band-Aids on a huge bleeding gash that's, you know, flooding the place with... They are.
He's saying that... this man, Bill Eddy, he's first exposed to the concept of personality disorders in 1980 when he was training as a therapist in San Diego's Child Guidance Clinic. The DSM-3 had just come out, and Axis 2 are the 5 diagnostic categories required the therapist to diagnose the presence or absence of a personality disorder. The current DSM-4 uses the same approach. And he's saying that he quickly learned, often the hard way, that the presenting problems about depression, substance abuse, were simply replaced by new ones if an underlying personality disorder was not addressed in therapy.
And right.
Now he's completed several years as a family law attorney, and he says, I've frequently witnessed the same underlying issues in hotly contested family court litigation, yet these remain undiagnosed and therefore misunderstood. As those with personality disorders generally view relationships from a rigid and adversarial perspective, it is inevitable that a large number end up in the adversarial process of court. Since more flexible and cost-conscious people nowadays are resolving their divorces in mediation, attorney-assisted negotiation, or just by themselves. Those cases remaining in litigation may be increasingly driven by personality disorders. But that's something you don't hear a lot about in family court. We're starting to hear a bit about narcissism. Most often it's the father who's been accused of being narcissistic, and it is the one reason that people like Nicholson used to use to deny a father contact with his children. We've had several cases like that.
Right. Just narcissistic, just too much what he likes looking at himself. I mean,
yeah, he loves himself more than he loves anyone else in his life.
So take his children away.
Yeah, and of course this is any father who says, I need to see my children, is deemed to be narcissistic. It's one of the pieces of advice, I suppose, that we give to people, that if they're talking about themselves and their children, you always place it from the child's point of view.
Yeah.
You always say, you know, my children have a right to see me and have to see their mum, instead of saying, I have a right or I have a need.
Sure.
But that's very wrong to interpret it that way, but they do it. It's a very simplistic approach, I know I'm putting on it, but it's it says a lot when you can't actually say, I need to see my children as an adult,
yeah,
as a parent, and I think every parent has a right to say that.
Well, you'd think so, wouldn't you? I mean, you know,
well,
it's not...
What do you do?
It's not like I have a right to walk down the road and murder some people with my axe or something. You know, I have a right to see my children.
You have a right to see your children, but if you put it that way, they will deem you as to being more interested in your own needs than in your children's needs, which is really, really unfortunate for them to do that.
It is. No, it is. It's just more obfuscation, basically. Just more ways of avoiding... giving men and families what they need.
Yeah, they say here, as this chap's saying here, also common is narcissistic personality disorder, NPD for short, more often seen in men. There is a great preoccupation with the self to the exclusion of others. This may be the vulnerable type, which can appear similar to BPD, causing distorted perceptions of victimization followed by intense anger, such as in domestic violence or murder, for example.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, and the children need to see you and you need to see them,
and
society accepts that. But if a father says that, well, you know...
He's narcissistic.
What's narcissistic. What's your problem, mate?
So this is a real problem when they're labelling men with these type of labels, you know, psychiatric labels,
yep,
to sort of say that they've got personality disorders, when all they are is being someone who says, I need to see my children.
Yeah. No, it's ridiculous. It's all just gone too far.
Yeah.
Well, Sue Price, once again, thank you so much for coming on to Dad's on the Air and giving us a little bit of a sparkle in the morning.
It's been a bit of a thrown together one this morning, I'm afraid, Ian.
Well, Bill Cable's not with us. He was we were expecting to see Bill, but he's in court apparently.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Couldn't manage to drag himself away, but he informs me that he will be here on deck next week. So
I hope he'll have some good news for me. He's in court for some people. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, let's hope so. Well, they've got Bill on their case, so they're doing well in that regard.
No worries.
All right, Sue, once again, thanks for coming on. And
sacrifice. If anything should happen, I guess I wish you well. A little bit of heaven, but a little bit of hell. This is the hardest story that I've ever told. No hope, love, or glory, happy endings gone forevermore. I feel as if I'm wasted, and I'm wasted every day. In the morning, something's on my mind. Can't get no rest, keep walking around. If I pretend that nothing ever went wrong, I can get to my sleep, I can think that we we just carry it on. This is the hardest story that I've ever told. No hope of love or glory, happy endings go forevermore. I feel as if I'm wasted. And I'm wasted every day.
Junk food advertising would be banned and the number of fast food restaurants capped under an obesity intervention wish list drawn up by health researchers. The list published in the Medical Journal of Australia also urged a redesign of supermarkets and a redirection of subsidies to make fruit and vegetables cheaper. Dr. Bibi Loft, director of the Michael Kirby Centre for Public Health in Melbourne's Monash, near where children go to get a lot of the stuff that they do, which I personally think is a good idea. I think all of those, you know, your Ralph magazines and all that sort of stuff, not your Penthouse and your Playboy, which are basically pornography, but your softcore ones. I mean, they've, you know, you've got these gorgeous women on the cover, you know, totally enhanced surgically, you know, in tiny little bikinis, you know, with their sexiest look they can possibly conjure on their face, staring out of the pages at you. I mean, it, you know, I don't think this is good for children. I don't think it's good for children.
Yeah, I agree with you there, mate. I don't think it's good for kids either. Should be taken off the shelves. You know, they've done the thing with the cigarettes and they've taken the cigarettes out of sight. Why not do the magazines?
Well, exactly. And, you know, why kowtow to these corporate interests that, you know, basically they can sell whatever they like, wherever they like. You know, they can advertise to our children, you know, during their, and I mean, why give them, why should they have this right? I mean, it's difficult enough in today's world to be a parent without being constantly at battle with corporations who are basically trying to shove unhealthy, unwanted products into your children's face and get you to pay for them. And their only motivation is profits. They don't care about your child's health. They don't care about your child's nutrition. They don't care about, you know, whether the girl on the magazine's boobs are real or not.
And this is an important thing for the government to take note of, because, you know, if we keep having McDonald's and KFC on every corner, and everyone acknowledges that our society is overweight and obese, well, this is all costing the government money in health and trying to look after these people and stop them from having heart attacks and,
yeah, and diabetes and all the rest of it, and yep, and high blood pressure and all the other problems that people have. Actually, somebody I saw some footage that was shot in Disneyland when the place opened in the 50s, I think it was. And it's just if you compare the basic dimensions of the people, the Americans, most of them would have been Americans back then, at Disneyland with the specifications of your average American these days. And not just Americans. I mean, you know, there's no health advantage to being fat.
No, and then, you know, you see these documentaries around and they show, civilizations in the hills of China and how they live and, you know, their life expectancy is, you know, 100+ years versus, yep. You know. So
here we are in the modern world with all these great modern breakthroughs and all of our technology, and things should be wonderful, and we're all... Well, we're not living that much longer. We're not certainly not living healthy lifestyles. You know, sitting in front of the television eating McDonald's on a Saturday afternoon watching the footy. I mean,
yep.
I don't think you could sell that lifestyle to a caveman.
You know? The televisions are getting better and bigger, and you know the chairs are getting more comfy, and you know. the fridge is always stocked, and
that's it. You know, and at least, you know, 15 different brands of beer to choose from, and, you know, a fast food place on every corner. This is, you know, we've created utopia, people. This is utopia.
Mm. It's killing us.
Well, it's killing us. It's killing us, and it's really, really bad for our children. And there's talk of this might be, the coming generation might be the first generation for many hundreds of years that actually has a lowered life expectancy than their parents. Which would be a tragedy, which really does say once again to all the other things that we've been saying that are going horribly, horribly wrong in our society. Here's another one. And they're just all symptoms of the same rot, really.
We've gone too far.
Yeah, well, it was a kind of slippery slide. Where did it start? Back in the 50s, you know? Was it that first little shot of pubic hair that they allowed in Playboy? Is that where it began? Is that where the moral slip, you know, where we're basically, because our society was a Christian-based society, based on Christian principles and rules? Well, they're all out the window now. One of the basis of Christian society was...
pretty well encapsulates it all. You know, we are amusing ourselves. We're taking the easy way out. We're going to get that takeout instead of, you know, standing there and cooking something healthy. You know, this will continue and continue until we end up killing ourselves and, you know...
Well, there's another article here in yesterday's Telegraph. It's Nation of Pill Poppers, and Sue Dunleavy has written, Australia has a pill-popping obsession, taking more than 40 million pills per day. 40 million pills per day. About 2 pills a day for every man, woman and child. I mean... Do you take that many pills?
I don't. No, it's unbelievable.
I don't take pills. It's incredible. This is, and we've got to take all these because of, well, here's the list of the big ones. The first one is for cholesterol. The next one is for reflux. Another one for cholesterol. Then one for pain. Then blood pressure's number 5. Number 6 is stomach reflux. 7 is blood pressure. 8 is diabetes. 9 is cholesterol. And 10 is blood pressure. So these are all basic problems that to do with lifestyle, to do with incorrect eating, to do with bad diet and lack of exercise, really, let's face it.
That's
we're paying $14.2 billion a year here in Australia. You should be able to download it either this afternoon or tomorrow morning from dadsontheair.net. So get onto your computer, download the show. You can hear it all again, me and Phil, and of course our special guests Sue Price and Greg Andreessen this morning, who added to the show. And that's about it for another week. We'll be back next week.
We dance on the air. We're here 'cause we care. We ask for more.